The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Only NFL podcasts where one of the hosts would never get called for 12 men on the field. Because he's not a man, team should roster a dog just for that reason. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. And this is our first Tuesday episode in more than a month. I am so glad to be joined on this fine Tuesday morning. It's a lot more newsworthy than I thought it would be. Yeah. News packed. Dominique Foxworth, welcome back to the show.
Hey, buddy. I mean, neither of the hosts of this podcast could get flagged for 12 men on the field.
That's a good point. Same. That's true. I didn't think about that.
Didn't think that went through.
Okay, so you should roster a woman and a dog.
There you go.
Dominique, when I told you we were recording our first pod back this Tuesday, I saw Broncos Bills on the schedule, and I thought, eh. And this was weeks ago. Didn't seem that exciting to me. Ended up being not only an incredibly exciting game and an upset, but ultimately led to the ousting, this just happened, of the Bills offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey. If I had told you after the Broncos got blown out by the Miami Dolphins, the infamous 70 points game, that they would not only beat Buffalo, but that the defense, I mean, this is an oversimplification, but that that performance would lead to the Bills offensive coordinator getting fired. What would you have said?
I would have been shocked, and I still am a little bit in shock. Like you mentioned, we're recording this early on Tuesday, so this is still fresh to us. And
fresh.
I get it. I get that they haven't been great offensively, but the coordinator hasn't seemed like he's the problem. I know some of our colleagues have been critical of the scheme that they've been implementing there, which is fine. But normally you get a little bit more time to adjust things, and especially considering the amount of success that they've had with Ken Dorsey as the quarterback's coach and as the offensive coordinator last season.
I wanted to start off this podcast by being like, the lamestream media is talking about the Bills. We're going to praise the Broncos, but I really can't do that because of this news. No. So Broncos fans, sit tight. I do want to talk about your team and especially the turnaround on defense. But I think it's an interesting case. I'll say this. So the question is whether he was scapegoated, right? Like, let's not beat around the bush. This is probably maybe it's recency bias, one of, if not the most successful offenses to get a coordinator fired. I posted the numbers through week 10. I'll just read them to you. First in success rate. So success rate is like a down to down thing. You know, you get this many yards at first down, second down, et cetera. Third in DVOA, third in EPA per play, fourth in QBR, third in yards per play, second in third down conversion rate, third in red zone efficiency. You might say, well, over the last month, this looked bad. Nope, over the last month, first in success rate, eighth in EPA per play. But Dominique, here is the figure where the Bills have not been very good. Worst in the NFL in turnover margin. That's kind of the story right there, right? Turnover margin.
Well, I guess. I mean, to me, honestly, this suggests that there, and I guess this is where it's a drawback that I don't like talking to people. Because this suggests that there is more going on than meets the eye. Like, I know that there's drama in that building around Diggs and the organization, or Diggs and Allen. And we saw the tweets from Trayvon Diggs, but I hadn't heard that there was some issue with Dorsey and Allen, or Dorsey and McDermott, or Dorsey and anyone. But given the numbers you just presented, and given the track record of the season before, and given the history of this team, like, they don't let people go. Like, that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why their window is closing now. It's like, anybody who's been there that's been any good, they're like, no, keep them, pay them, whatever they want, keep them. Let's go get another old dude. And so them moving on from Dorsey, given all those things, it suggests to me that there's more factors involved. And again, I don't talk to people because, I don't know, I got some sort of antisocial disease or something. But anyway, the point is, not my mental health, but that maybe Josh Allen didn't like how he was being coached. Maybe McDermott didn't like what was going on, because if anybody deserved to be fired after last night's game, it was probably the head coach or the special teams coach with how that game ended, not the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. So Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean were both extended right before the season. And when that happened, I was like, huh, really? Like, I mean, you know, don't you want to kind of see how this one plays out, right? Because this is a team that sort of butted their head on the ceiling of the AFC Championship game, which isn't to say that I think Sean McDermott's been a very good coach during his time in Buffalo. But I was just surprised that they didn't want to, like, hold on to that lever. And then yesterday, it's like, okay, well, what's the lever to pull here? Well, our defensive coordinator is gone, Leslie Frazier. Now, defense, generally, I have trouble criticizing Sean McDermott because they've lost like two of their best players, Matt Milano and Tre'Davious White. Von Miller has not looked like Von Miller. I think despite that, they've actually kind of kept it on the rails. But, you know, yesterday, and you're alluding to this, the end of game sequence with the second zero blitz that was kind of befuddling. And then, of course, the 12 men on the field, that does fall on the head coach. I guess they could still part ways with both guys.
I'm sorry, but, Mina.
Sure.
I don't want to steamroll past this. So the second zero blitz, I don't hate that as much, but I get the reason why. Like, they got a sack. It worked. I don't mind repeating that play. I would like a better matchup with Judy than a safety, but that's fine. Whatever.
Well, I
was just going to say, I could excuse that. We could have a conversation about that decision. That's a reasonable coaching decision.
So
what is not reasonable is the 12 men on the field. Sorry, go ahead.
No, let's talk about it, because I do think that's an interesting, it was an interesting moment and an interesting call, because, you know, the Broncos, they had gotten that underthrown DPI. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that too, by the way. Yeah. And so it looked like the game was over, and then they had that first successful blitz that really took them, I think they were on about the 50, if I remember, or no, they took them out of field goal range. So it's like, okay, right now, it was an interesting situational call, because they were right at that point where if they had gained 5 to 10 yards-ish on the play, you're probably at the cusp. Well, it turns out not at the cusp because the kicker missed the field goal, whatever. But you're at the cusp there. Right. So my question to you is, like, do you call any sort of pressure in that situation? It's a really interesting...
Yeah. That's why I can excuse that. Like, that makes sense. I could easily rationalize that decision as a smart decision, especially since they're moving the ball. The reason why they started blitzing was they weren't stopping. They were moving the ball down the field, and then they blitz to try to get something. That's the first that worked. Do it again. That seems reasonable to me. And honestly, like, one of the reasons we've talked about this before, how my rookie year in Denver, we ran a bunch of zero blitz. And what we realized was there are no offensive plays for zero blitzes. Like, there just really aren't anything that you can prepare for. The zero blitz pretty much stops them. You're going to get a guy in man coverage. You have to throw a quick contested pass. The tough thing is, if you don't practice it enough, your secondary is not aware that zero blitz means they're going to throw it immediately, and it's either going to be a quick pass or a deep pass. That's all you have time for, a deep ball with a lot of air under it or a quick one that's just like a dart. You don't have time to run a dig, a corner route, nothing intermediate, no double moves, none of that stuff. So once he gets past 3 yards, 4 yards, you turn and sprint. And that's not what happened. Murphy, I think, was in coverage, and he was squatting there. It's like, I'm going to take this away. I'm going to take this away. The pressure takes away all the intermediate stuff. And then he outruns him, and it seemed clear to me that Russell Wilson, who throws a great deep ball, intentionally underthrew that ball to make sure that there was no chance, because had he thrown a good ball, we have a touchdown.
He had great pressure, like, in his face, though, too, right? So, again, it was, like, that's pretty fair. Close to getting home. It was on the – so, okay, so I sometimes I said the – DPI was first. I meant to say it was on that play. They were at the 45. It's right there where, you know, if you get a stop, it's a very long field goal. It is, I think, to your point, it is the kind of thing where, like, if it had worked, we'd be like, what a genius. Nobody saw that second zero blitz coming. So it was a little bit of a dice roll. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Judy, that's a tough matchup.
I don't like that part of it. The matchup is bad, but the result of the play is not a bad one. It looked bad, but what you mentioned is Russell Wilson throwing a prayer ball up in the middle of the field. Like, after he just finished kind of picking you apart right there. I mean, I don't hate. I don't know. It feels like I could go to either way. That's not as egregious a mistake as the Broncos nailing the ball.
Yeah, I know.
Three times
so
in a row.
So bailed out. So bailed out.
Three times in a row, they nailed the ball. And at no point did Sean McDermott or anybody on that sideline think, hey, why don't we get our field goal team in there or our field goal block team in there? Because you know what they're going to do? They're going to kick a field goal.
Yeah. That would be what we'd be talking about today, if not for the 12-man penalty. But let's go back to the offense, because that is what we were talking about today. I guess I want to be clear. I don't mean to say that Ken Dorsey was perfect, I guess. There have been games where situationally I've been a little bit confused by run-pass balance at times. Like a lot of people, I've felt like Josh Allen's legs could have been utilized more during the season. I think I was talking a little bit with Orlovsky, and I was saying, well, this feels like a game where like the Broncos are a sneaky bad matchup because they have a locked on corner and Surtain Lock ticks down, right? Mm-hmm. And the Bills' lack of a reliable number two is a real problem against defenses with a very, very good cornerback, being out Diggs. And he was like, yeah, but I felt like they could have done more to get Diggs open, moved him around a little bit more. And I think that's fair. My point is just that, like, those stats aren't cherry picked. They're holistic.
Yeah.
I actually think when you point to like a bad play call, that's more cherry picking than saying the whole, you can even break it down by different points of the season. This offense was efficient. That's not cherry picking. That's totalistic. They just turned the ball over. And I thought Nate Tice, a friend of mine, you guys know if you listen to the show, pointed out how terrible the field position has been. Right. That's what's going on here.
So it's a bunch of things to respond to. So first, the Diggs point. All right. I get it. Move your guy around, get him positions to get plays. But I am of the belief, and maybe the corners, not maybe, the corners in the league are much better now than I was, and probably overall the corners were in the league. We've had this conversation before. I believe it's because they have grown up playing this game and they are not adjusting to it. They have been playing the same game the whole time. But that's a whole nother conversation. But I am of the belief that the rules and the game are tilted in the favor of the offense. If you have a true number one receiver, you should not have to concoct crazy schemes to get him open. If the cornerback is on the other side, if the cornerback on the other side is so good that your true number one receiver can't get open, then that receiver should be a decoy. That's fine. He can be a decoy. The problem is they don't got nobody else. And so if you are able to take Patrick Surtain out of the game, I consider that a win for the Bills. Like, you're taking this corner out of the game. That's cool. Now we got all these other guys to match up with, and we have a great quarterback. They should be able to get something done. They ran the ball better than they have in a long time, but somebody else got to catch the ball, and Josh can't make mistakes just before halftime where it wasn't even a – like, sometimes I excuse Josh's bad passes because he's capable of making wild plays, so I don't want to stop him from trying to do them, but the interception just before halftime was just a terribly inaccurate throw.
That was a bad throw, but it's not just Josh, right? Like, we got the team, like the fumbles, the drop, like the donkey kick, catch that ball, catch the ball.
Yeah.
Right. Like, this is, I think personnel deserves way more criticism than they've got.
Brandon Bean.
Yeah, dude. Like,
I'm looking at their drafts over the last few years right now as we speak, looking for one time when Brandon Bean did his thing, and I don't see him.
They're not
Epinesa,
great.
I guess.
He's been good this year, but
well, that was 2020.
There's
Gregory
holes.
Rousseau's pretty good.
But there's holes on this team, and I think also, like, I feel like the offense needs like a Cole Beasley type. Like, that's, and I do like Kincaid a lot as a player, but it feels like they need like a third down kind of move the chains type slot receiver who can benefit from those holes in coverage, who has really, really good hands. I don't know. It's, but again, like, we're looking for the problem, and this is an offense that's been exceptionally efficient moving the ball. They just turned it over, and it's a defense that was hurt. I don't know. I just,
they're, Yeah. The reason why I pointed to there must be something else is because, like, if you think about it, like your life bar in a video game, he was nowhere near dead. Like, Ken Dorsey had a lot more life left, it would seem. Like, normally coordinators get a lot more time than that. I'm not even going to invoke the name of another coordinator who seems like he's been on his last life in Pittsburgh for a long time. I mean, Dorsey ain't asking for that much. So that's what I mean. Like, I imagine in the coming days or maybe this offseason, we'll get the tell all about what's actually going on. But they didn't fire him for performance, right? They fired him because of something else, a clash of philosophies at the least.
Defensive head coach who just got extended. They love blaming their coaches. I don't know. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, suddenly the turnover luck turns and yeah. It's not just luck. Josh Allen turns. It's not. I just think maybe they stop turning the ball over. Maybe they get better matchups. And, you know, then everyone's like, oh, Dorsey was the problem. I don't know. It was kind of like, I mean, they have the Jets next week. That's a very difficult defensive matchup. The Eagles, the Chiefs, woof. Dang. Next week, they got the Jets, Eagles, Chiefs, and Cowboys over the next 4 weeks. So yeah. After the Jets, the Eagles, Chiefs, and Cowboys, they got to keep pace with those offenses because this defense, that's a very challenging matchup. So we shall see. I guess I'll just sum it up by saying it does feel a little bit like it feels like scapegoating because it's a midseason thing in addition to everything right. We've been talking about. But I also, to your point, there might be stuff we don't know about. This feels like, oh, we wanted to do something. The vibes are just so awful. I don't know. I think I want to say this, and this is maybe a good point to transition to Denver. I also think like everybody still thinks that 70-point game is like who the Broncos are. And yeah. I think what we're seeing is that, no, that was the way they started was the aberration. I'm not saying this is a particularly good football team or a great football team, but they're not who they appeared to be the first month of the season, as evidenced by the fact that over the last month, not just this game, like they've not only beat the Chiefs, they you know, put up a really good fight both games. Ninth in EPA per play since week 6 on defense, and the offense has been generally pretty fine all along. So this team is not horrible. And I think that maybe also like influenced the way where we're like, I can't believe they lost the Broncos. Well, the Broncos don't suck. The Broncos just beat Patrick Mahomes. And I think that's kind of been lost in this.
Yeah, that's fair. That's kind of you, but the Bills' back is against the wall. This is a game they got to win. They turned the ball over a bunch. Like, stop being bad.
Yeah. No, but let's talk about the Broncos, right? Like,
okay. Yeah. Broncos are much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're better than they were. There is some encouragement. I think the most encouraging thing is we saw, particularly in this game, we saw Russell Wilson do the things that some people were saying he couldn't do anymore, like the amazing athleticism and deep ball accuracy. Like that touchdown pass to Cortland Sutton has got to be one of the top 5 or 10 plays of the NFL season. It was just amazing all the way around, from the evasion in the backfield to the accuracy. It looked like I expected Tyler Lockett to pop out of nowhere and catch that ball in the corner of the end zone. And Cortland Sutton drags his feet so perfectly. Like that was something you can't coach. And that's why you pay Russell that type of money. They still ended up not scoring that many points. But it is encouraging, I guess.
Well, for the most part, Sean Payton didn't trust Russell Wilson to do anything. I mean, which is kind of the formula we expected coming into the season, right? Like they really took the ball out of his hands. Even with that ball, he still averaged 3.2 air yards per attempt. And they really leaned heavily on the run game. I will say, to Wilson's credit, And you kind of said this, he looks better moving than he has in 2 years to me. He looked better, rather, in this game. They didn't really get that much out of it, but there was that one play. And yeah, I think Andrew Siciliano posted this. It was according to Next Gen Stats. That throw and the Lockett throw were actually statistically the lowest completion percentage probability throws of like the next gen stats era. So amazing, amazing plays. I guess here's my question for you. Can that formula work? Run the ball. Russell Wilson has a few amazing plays. Few is even strong. It was like two or whatever, two or three. Is that enough? Like, can this team, which is now incredibly 5-5, sneak into the playoffs?
No, not with that formula. They're going to have to get more out of their offense. I mean, it's just plain and simple because...
Sorry, 4-5. My bad.
Yeah. If and the AFC is a lot of good quarterbacks that can make great plays. It just becomes such high variance offensively if you're not going to be consistently good and try to be like, all right, we'll just like tread water for the entirety of this game and hope Russell does something magical at some point to set us up for a big score on a fourth down. Like that to me seems like there'll be games when he does it. You'd be happy if he does it 50% of games and then you'll be in those 50% of games. And let's assume that you win 50% of the ones that you're in. That ain't enough to get y'all into playoffs. You're going to have to develop some sort of offense that is more consistent because as much as the defense has improved, it ain't the defense from last year. It's not the one where if you score 17 points, your team is going to win. They're going to need to improve on both sides of the ball, but particularly find something that they can hang their hat on offensively that is more aggressive than 3 air yard passes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the hope is like if you're that committed to running the ball, you're giving Russell some favorable looks, which again, they had a few of in this game, but they didn't run the ball particularly well. They just ran the ball a lot, and you know, when I look at, I guess again, when you look at the teams, that was the Bills. Let's see who, you know, when you're looking at the AFC, it's like, ooh, what a cluster. So the Broncos over the next few weeks, let's see who they have. So they, I said 5-5. I was thinking of, the Bills are 5-5. The Broncos in the coming weeks have the Vikings. That game suddenly got a lot more interesting. We're going to talk about the Vikings in the second half of this podcast, the Browns, the Texans, the Chargers, the Lions. That's a tough stretch as well. I guess, they would have to run the ball a lot more efficiently for me to feel better about this particular formula. But at least they're interesting now. It is a lot more. I think the defense still isn't as good as maybe some of us thought they would be coming into this season, but they have been really competent. I think, like, you've seen, I thought, shoot, they played, I mean, it helps when you have Patrick Sertan, but like Justin Simmons was awesome in this game.
Yeah.
They can play coverage. You know, they got Baron Browning back. I mean, he didn't do a ton in this game. They didn't really get after Josh that much up front, but they have decent players on this team. They were never as bad as they seemed. I think that's just sort of what I come out of this feeling.
There you go, Broncos fans. Not as bad as losing by 50. That's okay. Make the playoffs? Nah, probably not. Still got an expensive quarterback, expensive coach.
All right, let's take a quick
break. You don't like the reality? I love Denver. I played there.
Let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about our winners and what's from the weekend.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay. We're back. I tease this, so I'll just start here. As my first winner, I have the Vikings. The Vikings, who are 6-4, have a 24 plus 24 point differential, very different from last year. Over the next few weeks, they have the aforementioned Broncos and then the Bears and the Raiders. So, Dominique, we're looking at a real possibility that we might have the 9-4 Minnesota Vikings in December. How do you feel about that?
Great. I mean, this is so much better experience for watching Vikings games than the one from last season.
Totally.
Where last season, we in the media all were like, hey, guys, you guys aren't really that good. Oh, you won again? You still aren't that good, guys. Yes. You're not really that good. Wait till you get your ass kicked in the playoffs, and then they get their ass kicked in the playoffs. That is not fun. We are all Pastronaut fans. This is a lot more enjoyable an experience rooting for Josh Dobbs in this team that is playing better on defense. Like, they're playing better all around without Justin Jefferson or without Kirk Cousins. They're a fun team. And Josh Dobbs, like, let's be honest, that's what we want to talk about, right? Josh Dobbs?
No, I want to talk about the defense. I love this defense.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so, yeah, so I watched this game or their game from the weekend against Atlanta yesterday. And a few takeaways. Josh Dobbs. First of all, he was awesome in the first half, not so great in the second half. But I do think that he makes every game. He's the kind of quarterback who just inspires all those quarterbacking cliches. Like, he just finds a way, right? But he does. And they call a good offense for him. He uses his legs. He will throw the ball downfield. I thought TJ Hawkinson was outstanding in this game, by the way, playing through injury, just unbelievable as a pass catcher and getting yards after the catch. And especially when Justin Jefferson gets back in the mix, suddenly, oh, it's like, oh my gosh, this is a feisty and fun offense. They were a feisty and fun offense with Kirk Cousins as well. The defense is shocking to me relative to the preseason expectation. I thought they would be terrible. I thought this was going to be one of the worst defenses in the NFL. So they are 10th in success rate, 11th in EPA per play on the season. Over the last month, those stats have even improved. Brian Flores, like, take a bow, man, because given like the ingredients that he's working with on that side of the ball, I think he deserves a world of credit for what they've accomplished.
Yeah, I don't know how else to explain it. I mean, Danielle Hunter is, I'm trying to think of other people on that defense that preseason we were talking about being
Marcus Davenport, who's barely played. He's barely played.
Yeah, that's fair. Nobody else on this defense is someone who we'd expect to get to make big plays. And somehow this team, particularly the secondary, was a big issue. But yes, they figured out a way to make this work. Like, they're playing. What was surprising for me generally is you think of, and I guess this is stupid of me to kind of pigeonhole coaches this way, but I expected aggressive man coverage with aggressive blitzing from the Vikings. And at least I, I didn't watch this particular game with that in mind, but generally I've seen more zone out of them than I would have expected. And I guess that's a product of the talent, I guess, I don't mean it in level of talent. I mean the skill set of the players that you have. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're totally right. They're aggressive up front, but they're mostly playing zone on the back end. And then the aggression up front is just insane. It's like the number one blitzing team in the league, and that at the 48%, but the kinds of blitzes and pressures are like on a down to down basis, absolute chaos. Sims, creepers, blitzes with they are walking guys up, they're spinning them out, they're playing games up front. The way they use their safeties, who, by the way, I think the safeties have been quietly like the stars of this team. Josh Metellus and Cam Bynum are playing with their hair on fire. The whole team, Dominique, plays with their hair on fire. Like they play zone on the back end, but they are flying to the ball.
I think it's a good reminder. And because we do this for a living and we like micro analyze everything, and I think we want to find explanations for everything, that we assume that the talent differential, or not assume, but we project the talent differential being much bigger than it is, not from team to team necessarily, but that too, but from player to player. And nobody's in the NFL who's bad, you know, and like maybe they aren't great at everything and maybe they are a liability in certain situations, but everybody in the NFL is pretty good at football. Everybody in the NFL is pretty smart when it comes to football. Finding the best way to use these players, and sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes the best way to use a cornerback doesn't mesh well with the best way that you use your defensive line. That gets you in trouble. But if you can find, if you can tweak all the formulas just right, you can get the best thing out of your team. No matter the injuries, no matter the roster, like these are NFL teams with really, really good players at all levels, and finding ways to put them in positions to, and that goes back to the thing we hear about Belichick not focusing on what players do poorly, but focusing on what they do well. If that's the one thing that Brian Flores learned from Bill Belichick, that, and also that he was a fake interview. That's the other thing that he learned from Bill Belichick. But the other one was useful in building a team.
Well, I think that's where he just deserves a ton of credit, because we looked at this roster and we were like, okay, Brian Flores plays, he loves to blitz and he plays man coverage. Do you really want to leave these corners on islands? And I think he has come up with solutions in terms of getting pressure without completely, asking too much out of these corners. There have been games, like I think the Chargers games comes to mind, where because you're running into a quarterback who's like a super processor, who's like, bah, 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 you are going to suffer, and you know, good skill players with those corners. But I think in certain matchups, this approach, this one, it was one. I mean, you know, they put up some points, especially when Jameis Winston came in. But I do, by the way, that's a whole thing. I should talk about that at some point. Carr's just been awful. He was concussed in this game, and Winston came in, and Winston made some really boneheaded throws, but he also made some explosive throws. The touchdown to Olave,
it's ridiculous.
Peak. anyways, but yeah, it does feel like he's getting the most out of guys. Like, I think, like, in this game, I thought, up front, DJ Wonnum was a name. I was like, dang, DJ Wonnum, okay. You know, sure. Right. Yeah.
I think what I'm looking at some of their plays right now, and it seems to me like you can make up for the physical challenges and with deception.
Yes.
And I think as a coach, from a coaching standpoint, you would love to, and this is the classic group that people point to is like the classic Seahawks, or I guess the modern version of it would have been like how the 49ers were last year and used to be. It's like, if you have great talent, don't complicate this thing. You know, like, send them out there and let them play straight defense. If you don't, you run the risk of having mistakes, but you can complicate it a little bit and confuse the opponent. And they don't know when they have this opportunity to pick on whatever player. And if you can continue to do that, if you and keep them on their toes or on their heels, they're not sure when. That's, I mean, to go back to the top of the show, that's why you might argue don't zero blitz back to back. Because it's like, hey, we got you, tricked you. We had our guys at zero blitz, didn't have you, didn't get us. Don't do it again so that they then know you can get them. But generally, I feel like that's the best way. If I were a coach or a coordinator, I would practice like hell all the mental stuff because we can't make mistakes. But we are going to make this as confusing as possible for the opposing offense.
100%. And I think that's a real trend in the NFL. When you look at the best pass defenses, it's the really, really talented ones and then the crazy ones. and the chaotic ones. And I mean, just, yeah, the fact that he, you know, I said this to Dan, he really should be in considered. I mean, I don't know if anyone cares about assistant coach of the year, but, and frankly, by the way, KOC should be considered for coach of the year too, right? Yeah. Because when we look at those awards, we tend to be like, who are the guys who did the most with what they had? And I think those two coaches, man, have done an unbelievable job. But yeah, the Pastrnak rules. I love watching him. They're America's team to me. Like they're, because to be America's team, trademark rights reserved, you have to be fun to watch. You have to be surpassing expectations, and you have to have really likable players. And they check all of those boxes right now. So I love you, Vikings.
Enjoy it while it lasts. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Okay, let's do some woofs. Who is your woof? You go first.
My first wolf is the Jag. Well, my only wolf is the Jags. We've been talking about the Jags for a few weeks now, and they were kind of the sleeper team that lost enough games early that they were off of our radar, but they were winning. And we were like, hey, Jags pretty good, pretty good. Like what they're doing down there. Trevor Lawrence coming around. And then the 49ers coming to their house.
Smoked him.
It was embarrassing. Like, to lose is one thing. But to get dominated, and they were in it, I guess, at halftime, is 13-3. But this game was mostly about the 49ers defense returning, the one that we thought they were going to be all year. And they changed some things about the aggressiveness of their defense. The Jags were not prepared and could not make any alterations to address it. But yeah, that's pretty sad for a team that is in one of the weakest divisions in football. Yeah. We thought they were going to coast to them. Yeah, exactly. Them and the Colts. We're like, if you could beat the Colts, and then the Colts would lose their starting quarterback. Like, oh, all right, Trevor Lawrence, get ready for your playoff run, ready to win this division. But also, C.J. Stroud, big win. That's also why the Jags are big losers this weekend, because I'm not sure who I believe in more right now, the Jags or the Texans, which is absurd considering how we felt around draft time.
I'm going to talk more about the Texans on Thursday's pod, but I want to ask you a question about the Jags. I think defensively with the Niners are a team where, like, if you don't go up on them, this offense will make you look terrible, right? And they did all the things that they do to defenses, zeroing in on that second level in particular. You know, run the football well. They just ran into a buzzsaw. I want to ask you about the offense, because this was an offense that last season, second half of the season, was top five. Trevor Lawrence was playing like one of the five best quarterbacks in football. This year, when you watch them, I think what's so puzzling is personnel's not that different. I mean, is Zay Jones really the biggest difference, right? Who, by the way, I think was, I got to get this right. I know he was accused of a domestic battery. I don't know. I didn't grab the actual legal issues, but it doesn't appear that he's going to be playing anytime soon. But let me ask you about this offense. What's wrong? Like, when you watch them, is it Trevor? Is it the play calling? Is it that they can't run the ball? Is it the offensive line? Is it everything I just said?
Well, yesterday they didn't stand, or Sunday they didn't stand a chance. They couldn't block them. And I think that the 49ers surprised them with some more aggressive play calling than they normally do. But they also have that front that is a problem. And they added Chase Young to it, and it was a mess. So it's hard for me to be critical of Trevor Lawrence when he does not have the time. Also, I think back to, it might have been the Texans game that they lost. I don't know. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I could look through their game log. But there was a game early in the season where Trevor Lawrence was – it was a lot like that Lamar game against the Steelers. Yeah, it was the Texans where Trevor was drilling people with the ball. They just decided, today we don't want to catch. So those two games stand out in my mind, the one because it's most recent and the other one because it wasn't on Trevor. I have no explanation for the rest of the games because they have Ingram and Ridley and Etienne, who all three of those are quality skill players. Trevor Lawrence, as you mentioned last year, was doing a whole bunch, doing a lot better towards the end of the season. And then you put on top of it whatever value comes from playoff win experience. I think we have a hard time quantifying some of these psychological and emotional impacts, but I think we all agree that there is something that you get from having a major comeback win in the playoffs. Like, you feel better about yourself. That's why we all were somewhat high on this team coming in the season, is how they ended last season in a big moment. And then to come out this year and to seem like a team that hasn't been there before, a team doesn't understand the moment or understand how to make plays in those situations, that's confusing to me. And it's never, at least in my view, it's never been consistently one thing. The O-line yesterday, though, or Sunday, that was just atrocious.
Yeah, I mean, Lawrence didn't play well, but, you know, they didn't have a chance. And the O-line's been a problem. I talked about this last week, how his pressure numbers are misleading because he gets rid of the ball so quickly. When he holds onto the football any length of time, over 2.5 seconds, he's the most, which is outside of, you know, in rhythm throws, they call him. He's the most pressured quarterback in the NFL. More than Daniel Jones. 43% of dropbacks. That's an unsustainable offense. Now, that's not to say, you know, again, I'm not saying like, oh, Trevor Lawrence doesn't deserve any. I just said he didn't play particularly well against San Francisco, but that's non-functional. I think the question is like, okay, is it, I think to me, in terms of like issues, you have to ask, okay, like, well, play calling is really, really hard with that kind of offensive line and without a run game, but maybe that is, like, it's funny coming off of the Dorsey conversation. Maybe this is one where they do, Doug Peterson needs to take that back. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, is it like Ridley's usage? How much of that is Ridley versus how much of it is like they need to make him more of a focal point of the offense? It felt like last year they had a really good feel for using Evan Ingram at times. That's been an issue. I don't know. There's a lot of problems with this offense, but it feels like something has to change.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why my point is I don't know what the answer is for them. And I think their O-line's not good, but it's not, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a, I guess this goes back to the first point I was making about the Vikings is I can't at this level give you this excuse. You know, like figure something out, scheme something up. They're already getting rid of the ball, or he's already getting rid of the ball pretty quickly. You have talent. It's not as if you are completely bereft of talent. I give you a pass if we are expecting you to create offense with Tommy DeVito. That's not what you're working with. Like, and your O-line isn't great, but it's not as bad as what New York is dealing with. So I don't know. It seems like an oversimplification to name any one thing, which is always scary. Like when we talk about, I've been trying to figure out what's wrong with the Ravens at the end of games also. But I mean, it's never the same thing.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to fix it when you don't know exactly what it is.
I think that it really does go back to that kind of our discussion at the top, which is like in the NFL, like so often we want like one thing to point to. Yeah. And the Bills chose their offensive coordinator. But in the reality, it's a few things usually. With the Patriots, however, I think, and that's my woof of the week, it's a little bit easier to play the blame game here, although it is a few different things. So they're 2-8, it's the worst record in 20 plus years. They are one of the worst teams in the NFL. They, I think, are currently picking third, according to Tankathon, but they seem to be on track for a very high draft pick. However, the question of whether that will be high enough to get one of the quarterbacks is something that has yet to be determined. And they lost to the Colts in Germany on Sunday with one of the worst interceptions you'll see of the season, Mac Jones at the end, followed by another terrible, very clownish series from Bailey Zappe with the fake spike. I mean, how much of that is Bailey Zappe's fault to just get thrown in? Anyways, There's a lot of issues with this problem. Injuries on defense, bad drafts piling up, the quarterback not playing well, offensive line really struggled. I think what though, you know, this isn't, we don't need to have a conversation what's wrong with the Patriots, all of those things. The conversation that everyone is having, or I don't know if everyone's having, but the question is Bill Belichick going to be the coach next year? And I think it's a complicated one, Dominique, because, you know, I mentioned that the Patriots are going to have that high draft pick. I think what you have to ask is he the right guy to shepherd? And he's one of the best. He's the best coach in the history of the NFL. But it's I do think it's reasonable to have a discussion. Do you want him as the head coach next year, shepherding that next phase of the organization, given the offensive struggles in particular, and then how bad he's been as a GM? And he has been bad.
Yeah, so some people were throwing around the idea that maybe they'll take the GM responsibilities from him. I don't think that that's something you can do, given who he is and how long he's been there and everything he's meant to the organization. I think this is a trap we fall in when we're talking about players also, where we think about them as like a fantasy thing and don't take into account like how these things actually take place in practice. I have a hard time imagining a building where someone else is making the draft day decisions and telling Bill Belichick what he can and can't do, or what players he can and can't coach. Like, it seems like one of those things where you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. If you're going to move on from Bill Belichick, you got to move on from Bill Belichick. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's humbler, more humble than I think he is, and more flexible than I think he is, but I doubt it. So it's hard to look at the last 5 years and make an argument that he knows what he's doing and that he's the right person for them going forward. However, if the answer is you need a great quarterback, just so happens there are great quarterbacks in the draft. And if I would have a hard time moving on from a guy who won me 6 Super Bowls. That's what it boils down to. I would really have a hard time doing that. And like, that's why I cut it into the last 5 years and all the time before that, because you can't really argue for him given that. Like, over the last 5 years, what can you point to and say, oh, that was a thing he did was good. That was special. That was smart. That was ahead of his time. That was trend setting. That was a good
defense
idea.
Defense has been really good the last couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The defense has been really good. But what about, it hasn't been anything new or special. And the only thing that I think about is them blocking that field goal, going in motion to block a field goal. Like, that was cool. The defense has been good. He's drafted cornerbacks that play really well. That's really good. I take it back. I'm a cornerback, so Bill Belichick forever. Well, lifetime contract.
The last draft does look good, and then they lost Christian Gonzalez. You know, they lost Matt Judon this year with the defense. But, like, you know, you're looking at Keon White, Mapu. But, man, the drafts prior to that, and then, of course, the year that he splurged in free agency.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, and then the coaching stuff, it's not just the offense. I think I've mentioned him before. I think Evan Lazar does a fantastic job writing about the Patriots for Patriots.com, by the way, which is noteworthy because he is not afraid to criticize this team. And he had a note in his takeaways from the game, which I encourage people to read, that I laugh. It says, statistically, the Patriots have one of the worst special teams units in the NFL, despite employing, of course, Bill Belichick, who we know is a special teams guy, one current special teams coordinator, one former special teams coordinator, and at least 5 special teams only players. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. I think, okay, so first of all, we don't even know if they're going to get one of those quarterbacks because the Giants are nipping at their heels. They will take one. Although, you know, well, who knows what the Cardinals would do? We're going to talk about them quickly in a second. And then if the Bears have one of those picks, well, they're probably going to take one, but they might have 2. I don't know. It's going to be absolute. The last month of the season is going to be insane from that perspective. But if assuming, let's say they aren't, Dominique, in position to get one, to me, that actually makes it like, then I feel like you really need someone who can get something out of this offense with, I guess, a free agent. I don't know.
I mean, bleak over there.
You take Harrison, right? Let's say you have pick three and you can't move up. You take Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah. You're a team that hasn't been able to find a receiver forever.
Yep. Or you trade back. I mean, which is what I think Bill Belichick is more likely to do. But yeah, I mean, putting Harrison into that equation, do you think that solves it? I mean, I guess a receiver has fixed a lot of offense. Yeah. So you get Harrison and you get a free agent quarterback, because I don't think that either the guys that they have there right now are a long-term answer. And you think that's enough to make them a Super Bowl contender? I guess it depends on the quarterback.
Depends on the quarterback.
And how good the he can return the defense to form at some point.
Offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey.
Just hang it up. You got six. Let him go. Ride off into the sunset and stumble drunk out of random people's houses, which I know was a hoax, but make it a real thing.
I'll put a bow on it. By the way, Bill Barnwell also had a great column where he talked about how incestuous Bill Belichick's hiring has been.
Ugh.
I feel like that's what you need to do. You need to bring in a bunch of actual fresh voices on both the coaching and the personnel side. And if he's not willing to do that, then I think you move on. Yeah. So I'm kind of splitting the baby there because I'm afraid to say fire Bill Belichick too. Yeah, okay, let's finish.
You got to say it.
I can't. You can't even bring yourself to say it. You couldn't.
You're right. He won six Super Bowls.
Let's wrap with your final winner, and this is one that makes me very happy.
All right, my final winner, Kyler Murray.
He's back.
He's back, and it was fun. And I think the only way to go with this conversation, so like he was good. He wasn't like amazing, but considering that he's just returning from injury, like he was great with all the context considered on a team that's not that good. He was great in that situation, just returning. The interesting thing about Kyler Murray is I had assumed that there was no decision to be made there, that they were going to try to move Kyler Murray and then draft somebody. So I guess I'm moving off the winner, celebrating Kyler more quickly than probably you wanted to. So I'll give you a second to celebrate him. But the interesting thing is, what do the Cardinals do going forward with Kyler Murray under contract for a lot of money and some quarterbacks that people think are can't miss?
They're going to be in a fascinating position because we don't know if they're going to. Right now, you know, it's like they might, we mentioned a lot of the bad teams. They might not be in position to take one of those quarterbacks. So this all might be moot. And moving on from Kyler would have been very expensive. Who knows if they would be able to get a trade. Although if he plays well, makes it more likely they could trade him. Yeah. A lot of cap space next year. They still have a lot of draft capital because they have the Texans pick as well. Although that's looking like less likely it'll be a really, really high draft pick, but it's still a ton of draft capital. And you know, I think they're starting to figure out kind of who the guys they want to build around are. You know, one player who I thought was awesome in this game, the tight end, Trey McBride, who was, I think, a second round draft pick. So it's like, you're starting to say, okay, we got him. We got, you know, the offensive line, Paris Johnson on defense, Zaven Collins is showing some stuff. We still have Buda Baker. You want to come out of the season with like, you know, two or three guys on both sides of the ball who are your foundational pieces. I think with Murray, it's still too early to tell how comfortable you feel selecting him over one of those quarterbacks if you do have those options, and maybe it would take something to move up and go and get them. But I was pretty encouraged by just how good he looked moving. Like you said, it was kind of an up and down game, but you know, he had that the game-winning drive and that run. He looked as good as he has ever looked running. And I think that's so encouraging. You also saw him just make a few throws that were a reminder, oh, right, this guy has a very special arm talent.
He's proven that he can play at a high level in this league. How consistently is another question.
Yes.
As much as we love these college quarterbacks, they're still college quarterbacks who could miss. So like, that's why this is interesting to me. And then you take into account the contract considerations, it changes all the dynamics, and would seem like an obvious decision becomes a more difficult one.
definitely makes me more excited to watch the Cardinals every week the rest of the season. It's also, you know, combined with a different play caller, that was kind of interesting seeing him in a slightly different offense. They did have him still in the gun, but they used decent amount of play action, put him on the move a little bit. It's like, okay, you know, and I kind of like some of the, I mean, I mentioned I like McBride. You still have Hollywood Brown. I think Michael Wilson's kind of a fun player. So there's a little bit of spice with that Arizona offense. To me, again, it's all about progression because he is coming off a huge injury, lengthy absence. If he can show a little bit more week to week, I think as a Cardinals fan, you start to warm up to the idea of moving forward with him. So it was really fun to see him back, and it was fun to see him back and kind of shaking off the rust so quickly. So I'm excited about it. All right, Dominique, I'm still shaking off the rust, but you are not. So thank you for bringing me back. You are the group head sing to my Kyler Murray right now.
Oh, Arizona, so kind. Well, appreciate you as usual. So much fun. Listen to my podcast. Bye.
Check it out. The Dominique Foxworth Show featuring just Dominique Foxworth. No, Charlie Kravitz also. All right. Yeah. I'll see you.
He's not gonna get a feature in, though. He didn't put his name in the show. That's cool. Cool it, Kravitz. All right, bye, Mina.
He's no Lenny. All right, guys, I will be back later this week with Field Yates. I am looking forward to that, too. Talk to you soon.